Good evening, LA. I hope you're doing well. And well, I don't know, but I'd love to hear from you. If you are listening, you are listening to a live broadcast from KKLA's headquarters in Glendale. This is apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. And tonight is, well, I'm super excited because it's going to be an awesome night, but it's our science and faith night. And it's me and Dr. Leslie Wickman on the show tonight. And I want to give you guys our number because normally when I'm on, and I'm on twice a month, I think, and I like to point out the fact that you guys, the listeners, you are who are listening to the show or who make this show possible. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have a conversation with you. And especially tonight in the areas of science and religion, any question that you have, you can call and ask that. And you can dial the digits 888-995-KKLA. That's 888-995-5552. That's a lot of fives, I know, but that makes it easy for you. So make sure you give us a call and we'd love to talk to you. And, you know, tonight I just kind of want to dive in. Is that cool, Dr. Wickman?
Yeah, please.
Okay, because there's like amazing things happening. The third week of the month for apologetics.com radio is always sponsored by the ASA, right? An organization that you know well, that you kind of like head up. Like, you're a pretty big deal, actually. And I'm going to kind of blow you up tonight because, like, normally you don't. And I'm in studio with you at least once a month. And I think that you have an amazing story to tell. And I'd like to focus on that in the context kind of ASA and maybe pump that a little bit. But I'd love to know more about you personally, how you became a Christian and what led you into science. Can I go that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to share that.
Yay. Yeah. So when did you become a Christian, and how, what are the circumstances that surrounded that?
So I grew up in a Christian home. You know, my family was Christian. We went to church and Sunday school from as far back as I can remember. And when I was 7 years old in Sunday school, I decided that I wanted to accept Jesus into my heart.
Seven.
Yeah. And even before that, though, it's funny because I know God was working on me before that, because I had, you know, I remember one time I told my mom that I talked to Jesus on the ceiling.
What?
I had a dream or something.
That's unbelievable. That's so funny. And where did you live? Where were you living?
Oh, we lived on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State, west of Seattle. So
that's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's not like a bastion of Christianity up there either.
No, although, you know, as with many places across rural America, you know, in the rural locations, more people are Christians than you think in the general, like the big cities and whatnot. So yeah, you know, pretty much everybody went to church, you know what I mean, in our neighborhood type of thing. And you know, we went to a school that I had 17 kids in my entire grade, and, you know.
What?
I mean, seriously, we were out in the boonies.
That's unbelievable. What did your parents do for work?
Well, my dad was a forester. And so we always, you know, lived in these small little towns where the trees grew and it rained a lot, you know.
The Northwest.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So.
And so, okay, so you're 7 years old, mm-hmm. and you're professing faith in Jesus.
Yeah.
And then what's next?
Right. So actually, I mean, I look back on this experience 2 years later, 9 years old, I went to Bible camp, and at this Bible camp, I felt like God was laying on my heart that He wanted me to be a missionary. And this is, you know, here I am.
So you're nine?
9 years old. And I was so distraught over the whole thing that, you know, as a nine-year-old kid, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to leave home. I'm going to go across some ocean, and I'm going to live in a grass hut with a dirt floor, and, you know, there's going to be snakes and wild animals. I was pretty upset about it, quite honestly.
Oh, my gosh. 9 years old, 2 years in the faith, and you're feeling that God is imprinting on your heart and mind that you need to leave your home and go live among the Bushmen in Africa.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much.
That's
and
so funny.
I was so upset about it that I went back to my cabin night after night and cried myself to sleep. I was so distraught.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's how powerful this was. And after about three nights of it, I finally fully surrendered. And I said, okay, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And I was just overcome by this amazing sense of peace. I mean, it was an amazing experience. And I remember it to this day, just like it was, you know, a few weeks ago or something.
This is like really insane. So for those of you guys listening to Apologetics.com radio right now live, Leslie, I have to tell you that, like, we haven't talked about this. Like, this is news to me too. And like, this is not the story I was expecting from you.
Right?
Like, very experiential. Yeah. You know, you're having an experiential, yeah. You're having an experience with God.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a very early age.
Yeah, I know. I look back on it and I just marvel at the fact that he was working on me as a little kid, you know. And ever since that time, though, it really kind of set the stage or the tone for my entire life in terms of just kind of, you know, checking in with God about each and every decision. And from that time on, I look back on that as kind of the Abraham and Isaac experience, where God called Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac on the altar, his only son, you know, and being willing to follow him no matter what the cost.
Yeah.
And so I've gone on a number of short-term mission trips. In fact,
whoa.
Yeah. So back in, I'm going to date myself here, but back in 98, I went on a...
2000, back in 2000.
Right.
When you were 20.
Anyway, yeah. Let's not do the math on that, okay?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so back then I went on a Athletes in Action trip with a volleyball team to Africa. And when I was a kid, it was always this kind of vague sense that Africa was the place, you know. And so right before I went on the trip, somebody told me I needed to read Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist.
I read that.
That was an awesome book.
I read that. You know what? It's really funny is that you say that. So up until, I'm ashamed to say this, up until my early 20s, I had never read a book.
Wow.
Cover to cover. Never.
Wow.
And I wasn't a student. I was an athlete and I just wasn't in the school. And then a friend in college gave me that book.
Wow.
And that kind of spurred me on to reading. I have very fond memories. I mean, I don't like the theology of the book, but I have very fond memories that book. And it sparked something in me to want to read more. That tale is just unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh. And it relates to Africa and missions work. And I mean, the thing is, it was such a parallel for my life. Basically, the story of the shepherd boy in Spain who finds a map to buried treasure on his farm in Spain and follows it circuitously over a number of years, doing various different jobs along the way.
Yeah.
It gets to this spot in Africa and discovers another map to the actual treasure buried on his farm back home. And so it was such an allegory for my life, because here I was thinking that God might call me to stay in Africa. And when I was there playing volleyball in these tournaments in South Africa, every tournament, the women would get together before the tournament and pray. And he was just really impressing on me. God was impressing on me that this is something that I could do back home in the States. And so anyway, it was just kind of like, you can be a missionary regardless of where you are, right?
Absolutely.
And so, and actually, in hindsight, I see that my real calling was to be a missionary to reconcile these areas of science and faith, which so many people see as being very disparate.
Yeah, it's funny when you were describing, when you're talking about this stuff and your upbringing, and I wrote down on my notes here, you know, missionary, and circled it because that's where my mind was going.
Yeah.
Is maybe this is what God had in store for your life.
Yeah.
And so when you... where'd you go to undergrad?
Willamette University in Salem, Oregon.
Okay. And you played volleyball there?
Go Bearcats. I started out doing volleyball, basketball, and track.
Yeah.
But, you know, that works great in high school, but in college it's a little tougher. And so I ended up actually dropping volleyball my freshman year and concentrating on basketball and track throughout my college career.
Oh, wow. And then after college, I could be wrong here because I don't have your bio pulled up right here, but I feel like a couple months ago I read that you played pretty high level volleyball.
Yeah,
too.
I did. I played some with FIVB, like some pro tournaments and stuff. But
that's unbelievable. Like, you have an amazing life story to tell. I'm so glad that we get to share this tonight.
Well, it's totally, you know, I was telling somebody earlier today, it's you know, all glory to God. I mean, because of that early experience at Bible camp when I was nine, it was like, you know, every fork in the road, I just check in with God and just go, okay, what do you want me to do next? You know, and just honestly, if God opens a door for you and his fingerprints are all over it, you know, who am I to say I'm not going to go through that door? You know what I mean? And
well, but that's hard. You know, what's funny is maybe God trained you in a special way, because I feel like that's hard. That's really hard for adults, right? But for kids, it might be a little bit easier because you're a little bit more willing, or even younger adults with fewer commitments.
And stuff. And I think along the way too, I learned that I can either, you know, kind of go my own way and kind of bang my head against the wall trying to make something happen that I want to happen, or I can do what God showed me early on and follow his leading and direction and just go through the doors that he opens.
Yeah.
And you know, it's more exciting. It's a more exciting life. The things that I've been able to do, I mean, I played, after I got back from Africa, I started playing women's professional football, you know, and I was the team chaplain. So I was doing the kind of ministry work that I saw on the beach at these tournaments in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, on the volleyball court, I was doing the same thing on the football field here in the U.S., you know. And anyway, and the work that I did with the space program and all that sort of thing, I mean, those are...
Yeah, well, we can't skip over these things because these are big deals, I think, you know. And if you're listening, guys, you're listening to KKLA Live, apologetics.com radio. And I'm your host, Jonathan Noyes, and my co-host here is Leslie Wickman, and she is affiliated with the AHA.
ASA.
ASA, not AHA, ASA. And are you the president? Is that the title?
I'm the executive director.
That means she's the boss. So she's the boss at the ASA, and we're going to kind of just through her life, and we're going really fast because I think that you have a lot to say. But okay, so something you just mentioned is your involvement with the space program, and I can't we don't really want to because you had a pretty substantial role in some pretty substantial events.
So I worked on the Hubble Space Telescope program, and I worked on the astronaut training and astronaut interfaces, make sure that through simulations and training exercises that all the repair activities could be performed in space. And along the way, I got a lot of astronaut training myself.
Because there's a picture on now I'm on your bio because I had to go. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of you wearing a space suit. That's insane. Have you actually experienced weightlessness?
Yeah, I have, yeah. So, yeah, I've flown on the Vomit Comet. The KC-135.
Oh my goodness, would they just drop?
Well, they don't. See, that's a misunderstanding, actually. They fly a parabolic trajectory. So they're straight and level, and then they pull up into a parabolic arc.
I don't know what that means.
Well, you remember parabolas from high school geometry, right?
Yes,
so
yes.
It follows the path of a parabola.
Okay.
And it's over the top of the parabola where the centripetal acceleration towards the center of the circle, right, has an opposing pseudo force of centrifugal acceleration away from that center and offsets gravity.
So you get
about 20 seconds of weightlessness over the top of the arc.
Okay? And you do vomit.
Well, yeah. especially
it's one of the prices
first,
that you pay, right?
Yeah. So the my first time on it, I hadn't been known to have motion sickness, at least not on planes or roller coasters and all that sort of thing. So I didn't really think I'd get sick. And so, they the first time you go on it, they say you should probably pretty much sit still and just kind of get used to it. But I was like too eager to experience it. And I got up and started doing somersaults and bouncing off walls right away. And after about, I think it was, I don't know, 10 or 12 parabolas, I started feeling queasy and went back and sat down. And then a few more later, I got sick.
So when you're doing this, you do multiple parabolas.
Right.
So the plane is going up and down, and it's at that peak that you experience weightlessness.
Right.
You said for like 20 seconds
or
so. So then is it like 20 seconds down and then 20 seconds back up and then?
No, it's okay. So remember your parabola again. It's over the arc of the parabola. So from the beginning of the arc to the end of the arc, you get the weightlessness for about 20 seconds. And then basically when you pull out of the parabola and start going straight and level at that pullout point, you pull about 2 G's. So you essentially weigh twice what you normally would. And then you go straight and level for a very short amount of time. And then you pull into the next one, you pull 2 G's going into it, and then it goes down to zero and back up to two. And then,
oh my gosh.
So anyway, it's like being on a very violent roller coaster without being able to see where you're going.
That's unbelievable. That's crazy. And so you worked on Hubble, you worked in the space program, you've experienced weightlessness. That's just my silly question.
Yeah. So actually, yeah. And so we did weightlessness on the KC-135 vomit comet, as well as in the water tanks. So various simulations that need longer than 20 seconds of weightlessness, they do them in a large water tank where you get neutrally buoyant. So your spacesuit or whatever you're working on is ballasted so that you're basically completely neutral in the water.
That's
you don't
so cool.
sink and you don't rise and whatnot to do longer term, longer duration
sure.
experiments. So,
and one of the projects that you had said, this is like so intriguing to me, that you had worked on was making sure, you had said that you worked on a project that made sure that repairs could be done while the astronauts were in space.
Right.
What did that involve?
Right. So, well, again, you know, the Hubble Space Telescope was designed to have particular pieces of equipment exchanged in space. And if you have watched any of the Hubble repair missions,
yeah.
Then you see them changing out various boxes and pieces of equipment and whatnot. So we did simulations of all of those in the water tank with mock-ups and models of these things. And so we had to make sure that we had all the support equipment necessary to, like, for example, I was the responsible engineer for the portable foot restraint that the astronauts stood on to do these tasks. And we had a tool kit of a whole bunch of different tools that they use to actuate the bolts and
sure.
connectors and all that sort of thing. And so we go through all these operations and
so
make sure
cool.
that they were actually feasible, right?
Yeah, so, well, NASA, I would assume, doesn't just do anything on a whim.
Right,
know? I
exactly.
Mean, people's
so,
lives are at stake. Yeah.
Yeah, so literally hundreds of hours of time in the water tanks doing these simulations.
That must have been so much fun.
It really was. It really was.
So is that what you wanted to do when you were younger?
Well, you know, so, okay, yeah. So we kind of
buzzed Sorry.
Through some different parts of life. But while I was growing up in the Pacific Northwest, my dad had a telescope, and we'd go out in the backyard on the rare clear night that we had in
yeah.
the Northwest and would look through his telescope at the stars and the moon and the planets. And quite honestly, that really inspired my interest in space from a pretty early age. And it crossed my mind that, you know, well, I'm not sure I thought astronaut until a little bit later. I do remember specifically in, you know, the college kind of grad school time frame thinking, huh, it'd be pretty cool to be an astronaut and kind of couple my interest in astronomy and space with kind of the actual flight experiment or experience of going into space. And so I got my pilot's
That's
license
so cool.
along the way. And, you know, and anyway, yeah, I've had, like I said, it's been a really interesting adventure. And I know that if I had tried to kind of orchestrate all these things on my own, it just would have probably been very frustrating. But like I said, you know, checking in with God for every kind of fork in the road and just saying, okay, what's next, you know, and following him through those open doors, my life has been much more of an adventure than it would have been otherwise, I'm sure.
That's unbelievable. And along the way, so you went to college and then grad school.
Right.
At a prestigious grad school.
Yeah. So I went to Stanford for both my master's and my PhD program. So,
so you like it, from where I'm from, Boston, you're wicked smart. Is what
wicked
we like to
smart.
Say. Wicked smart. Cause that's a pretty decent school. And, I feel like somebody needs to write a book on you and make a movie. You know, it's like the Christian version of Contact. You know, have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, know what that reminds me at this point, like I should say like, hey, if you're listening here and you're working in a church, if you're a pastor, a youth pastor, or a main pastor, Leslie would love to come share
absolutely
with your church, and
yeah.
she's available for that.
Yeah, I would love to do that. If you're interested in having me come and speak to your church, you can contact me at my ASA email, which is Leslie at asa3.org. So LESLIE at asa3.org.
Yeah, you have to do this. My church, just so you guys know, I'm a pastor of Living Oaks Church in Newbury Park. We've got to get you out there too, because we do an apologetics conference every year.
That would be awesome.
And if you guys have, and if any of this is sparking interest and you want to hear more, if you want, Leslie, we're going to get into, I think, a little bit more of your specialties and what you're really interested in and passions. Mm-hmm. But if you want to, if you want her to come and speak on any really area of science, she would love to do that. Okay, with that, I think that, okay, so now you're in grad school, and what are you studying?
Right, so for my master's degree, I studied aerospace engineering. And so
well, that makes sense for what you were doing in NASA.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, also known as rocket science.
A lot That's of crazy.
So
you're like really a rocket scientist.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, that's kind of the colloquial term, you know. I mean, I have done some literal rocket science where you calculate orbital mechanics and like maneuvers and orbit changes and all that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of colloquial for anybody that's kind of an aerospace engineer, whether you're doing rocket calculations or something else, like, you know, what I did on the Hubble Space Telescope or the space station programs. So as like I said, for my master's program, I studied aerospace engineering. And then for my PhD, I was in the mechanical engineering department, but studied human factors and biomechanics. And I did my dissertation research on spacesuit design for lunar and Mars exploration.
That's crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So you helped design...
Well,
spacesuits.
I collected data through my experiments that I was doing in water tanks, having test subjects walk and run and do other things in simulated reduced gravity. I took biomechanical data to use for the next generation of spacesuits that'll be used for going back to the moon and Mars.
Oh my goodness. And are those currently like being produced, or is your research leading to that?
I mean, yeah, my data is being used to develop those things. I mean, some of the things that I looked at were the best distribution of mass of the spacesuit and life support systems that the astronaut would have to carry on the suit. And, you know, looking at ranges of motion that the joints go through in walking and running on the lunar and Martian surface, because obviously when you're in low Earth orbit, where the space station is, you're in weightlessness, so you're not walking at all. And so those spacesuits that were used on the shuttle and are used on space station were not designed for people to walk around.
They're just floating. Clunky and heavy.
Yeah, they're very difficult to really walk in, and even the Apollo suits. The guys that you saw from the videos of walking on the moon and whatnot, you see people kind of jumping and skipping. Kind of the mobility, the lower body mobility of those suits wasn't even really designed to actually have a normal gait. So anyway, so those were some of the things that I looked at in my research.
That's unbelievable. And like you kind of explained, like through looking through the telescope and really wanting to get into the space stuff with your dad, and then those clear nights that you infrequently had.
Yeah.
How does I want to kind of get into the aspect of your faith in God, mm-hmm. and how does science lead you in that, or how does your faith lead you in your science? I don't know which way to.
Right.
It's probably
a
both and.
Yeah.
Like they both undergird each other.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So would you say that science supports Christianity?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're not, so you went to Stanford mm-hmm. and you're saying that science and Christianity aren't in conflict.
That's correct.
That's odd, because that's not what I hear.
You know, it's funny too, because recent studies have shown that 61% of scientists in the United States self-identify as Christian. So that's a majority.
That's a big majority.
It is, actually, yeah.
Statistically.
And you just don't hear that very often.
Yeah.
That's not very well known.
I feel like when we're talking about this, we get stuck into the realm of we focus mainly on those sciences that inherently kind of push back against Christianity, like the biologies or the social sciences. And in those areas, I would assume that the percentage is lower. But then you start looking at physics and...
Yeah. It, well, so the 61% is really kind of across the board, an average. And so, yeah, you're right. It's kind of funny because the hard sciences that we, you know, refer to, the, you know, physics and math and that sort of thing, there's a higher percentage of people who identify as theistic. And as it, as the science gets fuzzier and fuzzier, those percentages go down. So, yeah, it is interesting. But in physics, you're up close and personal with those fundamental laws of physics that are essentially undeniable. And, you know, where did they come from?
Yeah, and I think that that's actually, that can lead us, and we're going to come up to a hard break, but that can lead us into discussion for the need, mm-hmm. or actually, I guess the mission of the ASA is to, well, you sent me some literature, and I'm just off of a PowerPoint presentation, just why was the ASA formed? Number one, it was formed in 1941. This isn't just some willy-nilly organization.
Right.
It's been around, but it was formed so that science teachers, I'm quoting, science teachers who are Christians could help ministers and evangelists who are dealing with scientific objections.
Yeah.
So that they, so you have experts in the field informing and helping Christian ambassadors. I mean, we're all ambassadors for Christ, right? Mm-hmm. But helping the evangelists and the ministers become informed on scientific issues
exactly.
to further the faith and point people towards Jesus through his natural revelation.
Yeah.
Which is like so cool.
Right. And I mean, we'll get into this more, I'm sure, but if you think about the context, you know, the Scopes trial had just happened in something like 1925 or so. And so there was this great perception that science and faith were at odds. And so it was kind of in the wake of that that people realized we needed to actually address this issue.
Yeah. And I love this topic. And we're only getting deeper, guys. If you're listening, you're listening to KKLA, this is apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. We want to hear from you in the next half hour. I'm talking with Dr. Leslie Wickman, who's just unbelievable. You're amazing. Your life story is so inspiring and incredible. We're going to be back, and we're going to talk ASA and more, all things Dr. Wickman. So make sure you stick with us, and we'll be back in like 60 seconds.
The mission of apologetics.com is to challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe on the radio, on the internet, and now in the Life of the Mind conferences. If you believe in the work that apologetics.com is doing, we encourage you to support us with your prayers and also with your tax-deductible gift so that this ministry will continue on the air, on the web, and in events near you. Gifts of any amount are appreciated, and it's very simple to participate. Just go to apologetics.com and click donate. It's safe and secure. Or you can send your check or money order to apologetics.com, 1900 Southwestern Avenue, San Pedro, California, 90732. Thank you for supporting apologetics.com.
All right, let's get back to the apologetics.com radio show.
Welcome back, guys. That was a really, really short break, Wilbert. I appreciate it. And the chill music coming in, I feel all good. We're ready to go. I've got my two different types of teas going. I'm nice and relaxed, but not for long because we are talking about science and faith on apologetics.com radio. And if you've just tuned in, guys, you are listening to us live on KKLA, and we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 888-995-KKLA. That's 888-995-5552. And I'm here with Dr. Leslie Wickman of, well, you're of a lot of things. You've got so many hats. Where to start? And tonight I'd love to just focus on the ASA. And we were talking about the, that's the American Scientific Affiliation.
Yeah, and we should give them the website too, again, just to, so it's ASA3.org. So ASA3.org.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of resources there. You can join the organization. We have a quarterly journal that comes out four times a year with various articles on science and faith, lots and lots of pre-recorded talks from plenary speakers that we've had at our annual conference. You just got done. Exactly. In late July, we had our annual conference at Gordon College back in the Boston area.
And you broke attendance records.
We did for the third year in a row. We're really excited about that. We had 600 people at one of the events. Yeah, it was Dr. Francis Collins gave an amazing plenary talk on the joyful complementarity of science and faith. And this guy, Francis Collins, he's the head of the NIH, National Institutes of Health, and has been that since, I think, 2000.
Unbelievable.
Not 2000. What did we decide?
It was
for the last 10 years.
President Obama.
2008. Yeah. Since 2008.
And that's one of the things that we said. And before that, he was working on the Human Genome
Project.
Exactly. And we were talking before that he's like traversed political lines. And he's just really smart. It seems like he's a nice dude.
Yeah. And so, after his talk, he broke out his guitar and jammed for a while. It was amazing.
He leads. I've seen him present. Online on, I think, on YouTube or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was some time ago, and he gave a basically an argument for design, right? So that we're designed. And I think he was looking at a picture of up close of our genes and stuff, and he compared it to a stained glass window. And then he said the only response now is to worship, and he pulled out a guitar and led the audience in a song of worship.
He wrote a bestseller book called The Language of God, referring to the DNA and the work that he had done on the Human Genome Project. He's a big deal and also just a very humble man and a very evangelical Christian.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so let's get back to the ASA, your role in it. And I think we had mentioned that, we've been talking your kind of life story, coming to faith around seven, because you talked to Jesus on your ceiling, which is so cool, like a little girl dream, right?
Yeah, I had a dream and I told my mom the next morning that I talked to Jesus on the ceiling.
And I would love that if that happened to my girls. Like, I've got four little girls and my oldest right now is eight, and it would be so cool to hear that from her. And I'd be like, oh, hey, this is really neat. And then so then at nine you had a experience at camp where you felt that God was leading you into missions.
Yeah.
And that kind of came to fruition where through college and sports, and then just missions, short-term missions trips. And then that led you to college and grad school at Stanford, where you became a rocket scientist.
Right.
Which is just unreal. And then you went to work at NASA, where you worked on, space station.
So the work that I did at NASA was on spacesuit design.
That's right.
And collecting data for spacesuit design for lunar and Mars exploration.
Yeah.
And then I went to work for Lockheed, where I worked on the Hubble Space Telescope program and the International Space Station program. And along the way, I got a lot of astronaut training in, and Lockheed designated me as their corporate astronaut.
And that's why if you go online and you check, if you check Dr. Wickman out on her, if you just Google her name, your website comes up, and I think it's just your name, right?
LeslieWickman.com, yeah.
Leslie Ann Wickman.
Right. You can put in LeslieWickman.com too. Yeah.
Okay. And is there a way to get in touch with you? So if people want to have you out to their church to speak.
Yeah, they can contact me either through the website. There's a contact me link on the website, or you can go to, you can email me directly at leslie@asa3.org.
Okay.
Through the ASA. And yeah, I'd be happy to come out and speak to your church, particularly about how science and faith fit together.
I can't recommend Dr. Wickman enough to do this, and you're winsome, you're dynamic, you have a story that's just like unbelievable, and I would love to see your formal presentation on that, because you believe in God and science, and you graduated from Stanford, which is kind of like where we left off before the break, and that led you towards your faith in God has led you towards science.
Yeah.
And can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. In fact, I mean, really, it started for me, when I was in junior high school, I encountered my first atheist scientist. And it was interesting. It was basically biology class. And this gentleman would tell us that, you know, what you're going to learn here in biology is almost certainly going to contradict what you've learned in church and Sunday school. And, you know, it was interesting because when I was going through that, it was very distressing to me. It was very disturbing, you know, to hear that. And it was like, okay, what do I do with this?
Well, your middle school, you said, right?
It was junior high. Seventh or eighth grade, somewhere in there. And I just didn't know what to do with it, you know. But even as a whatever I was, 11, 12, 13 years old, it didn't make sense to me that the truth about God could possibly or logically contradict the truth about God's creation. If God was in fact the creator, then how on earth could his creation contradict him? And so, you know, I never put it in those terms at that age, but it's really the whole two books. God has revealed himself through scripture and his creation.
That's right.
And that both of those books are reliable sources of revelation.
That's right. God doesn't lie through his creation. He doesn't lie through his word.
Exactly.
And I think that there's some, you know, there's different perspectives that we could take on these issues, and there's certainly some controversial issues that we can talk about. But in the end, I think that his creation points to who he is.
Absolutely.
And his glory. I love the idea. I think it might have been John Piper who said it, you know, God's creation screams his glory.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when you're looking at these amazing things and then in traveling, you know, I've seen some awesome things.
Yeah.
And it just screams God.
Absolutely.
And that's interesting. So, okay, so you're in middle school, you challenged.
Right. And so, and, you know, like I said, going through that, I didn't know where to turn really. You know, as a 12-year-old, I didn't really know where to start looking. But, you know, looking back on it, I see it as kind of being the kick in the pants that I needed to kind of start, you know, investigating this for myself.
That's
and
so
try
cool.
to figure out, you know, how science and faith fit together. And so I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
I mean, it set me on kind of a lifelong trajectory. And as we talked about before, I had this kind of early on calling to a mission field. And I really do look at it as now, ultimately, it was a calling to the mission field of science and faith to reconcile those two areas, those human endeavors, you know, to each other and make peace.
That's right. That's awesome. And, you know, along those same lines, are there any, I don't want to skip over anything, but like the questions just come to my mind. And if you don't want to answer them, you don't have to. You can try to keep me on track. But are there any areas that like growing up or in your early profession or even right now that of science that you struggled with that you had to kind of wrestle with as far as the biblical text? And
And I think these are really common areas that people have to deal with. And sometimes they happen sequentially, maybe in the same order for a lot of different people that were brought up in the church and had to come to terms with science. I mean, I think a lot of problems are created by you know, people answering questions that little kids have about, you know, science and faith. And, you know, it's like, was the earth created in, you know, six literal days? Or, you know, my teacher at school is telling me that the earth is very old, you know, and I think well-meaning Sunday school teachers sometimes, you know, answer little kids' questions without really maybe knowing the answer themselves. You know, they kind of give it their best shot, and sometimes confusion ensues, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think like—
Or parents.
Right, exactly.
You can't know everything about everything.
Right, exactly. I mean, not everybody can be both a theologian and a scientist, right? I mean, so you're going to answer your kids' questions however best you can, right?
Yeah.
But in any case, I think that there's kind of three main things that people have to deal with. I certainly did. And one is kind of the time question, you know, how old is the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the first things that people have to come to terms with when they're reading scripture from, you know, maybe all they've ever done is read from kind of a 21st century Western perspective, you know, in modern English, you know, and really the text needs to be looked at in, you know, for the genre of literature that it is, for the context, you know, who is the original audience, the original language, all these things have to be considered. And one of the things that was helpful to me along the way was just discovering that, you know, the word that's translated day in the English Bible is yom, right? Yeah. And it can be Yom can be literally translated as an era or an indefinite period of time. So, I mean, just even that one simple thing can free people up from thinking that, oh, it was six literal 24-hour days, you know?
And you know what? I have a call. We have a call on this issue. If we can jump out. And I'm going to go ahead and take it. And hey, Ron, are you with us from West Hills?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Ron, thanks for listening, man. Thanks for calling even more.
Yeah, I have some questions for Dr. Wickman, also a.k.a. Laura Croft, although we didn't hear the Tomb Raider bio. I think she's done so many things, I wouldn't be surprised.
Ron, isn't that story, and we've only heard, a half hour of it, not even, isn't it incredible?
I know. Anyway, my question is about the ASA, mm-hmm. The American Scientific Affiliation of the scientists that belong there.
Yeah.
Are these scientists under a large umbrella? Because you would have, obviously, old age mm-hmm. creationists there.
Yes.
And I think with Dr. Collins, he's kind of a theistic evolutionist.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I mean, he actually prefers the term evolutionary creation.
Oh, okay. Evolutionary creationist is the way he described himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about young Earth creationists? Do they join your group, or are they kind of... They don't associate with you at all.
I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, we had Ann Gager at our meeting in July in Boston, and she is self-professed young Earth creationist.
Yeah, so. There's on the website, Ron. It's really cool because I've been educating myself in preparation for this interview and just our conversation tonight. One of the things I really love about the ASA is it's not necessarily scientific principles that join the members together. It's actually, they say two things unite, and I'm quoting from the website here, two things unite the members of ASA. One is belief in Orthodox Christianity as defined by the apostles and Nicene creeds. And then they link to those, which is kind of neat. And then a commitment to mainstream science that is any subject on which there is a clear scientific consensus. So I think that, and then further on in the website, it says that their goal really is to create a safe environment in which dialogue can flourish and diverse, even contrasting ideas can be discussed with courtesy and respect.
Yeah, absolutely. So the ASA is and has always been a big tent organization in terms of perspectives. We're not an advocacy group in terms of kind of promoting one specific view. And that's one of the things that we really appreciate about the organization is that we have different perspectives and can dialogue with respect. So,
how do you like that answer, Ron?
Well, that's good because I was I went to the website and saw the you know, I'm a person that has a kind of a leaning towards the old Earth consensus. I mean, the old Earth. But I'm in a church right now where they're studying Genesis in the Bible study, and of course they are so dogmatic about young Earth creationism and the literalness of the word Yom, meaning 24 hours, that it's like Dr. Wickman could come and speak to the church, but see, they would not even be open to hearing a presentation other than their they see it, and that's just the way it is. That's fine. I realize where they're coming from.
If I can kind of respond to that just for briefly, I actually had an opportunity last March. I was invited to Iowa to speak at, first I visited Dort College where we formed a new chapter of the ASA. And then while I was there, some of the faculty at Dort asked if I would be willing to speak at a local Christian school. And it was quite interesting, actually, leading up to the day that I was to speak, one of my colleagues said, hey, you need to see what's going on in social media. And there's an organization back there that was trying to campaign to get me banned from speaking at the school. And I hadn't even been planning to touch on origins at all. I was just going to give kind of a top-level view of the fact that science and faith can have things to say to each other and that they're not at odds with each other. And it was just going to be kind of a, isn't it cool that, you know, the universe is so finely tuned that life can exist. And if you change any of these parameters just a little, that possibility goes away. And it was quite interesting. It wasn't until the Q&A that the question of time or origins came up at all. But during the Q&A session, the vice principal that was hosting me afterwards came up and he said, you know, we could have continued that for hours with the students. They had so many questions. Mm-hmm. And so my years of teaching students, both at Azusa Pacific and Cal Baptist, has made me very sensitive. In addition to my own personal experience dealing with these questions and coming to terms with them, I feel like I'm capable of handling those issues with kid gloves, you know. And so if you think there might be a possibility that your church would be open to at least exploring the landscape of science and faith, I'd be happy to do that.
And Ron, just to encourage you, so I pastor a church. I'm a associate pastor. I'm not the head guy, but I pastor a church that's predominantly and doctrinally the church ascribes officially to a young earth position, right. But I hold an old earth position, and I got hired there. I attended there, and then they hired me out of the congregation. But they knew my position. And I think that one of the things that we have to keep in mind here is oftentimes this discussion, old earth, young earth, is just a distraction. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, number one, I don't think it's not a core issue, right?
Right.
And we as a church are, like what you're saying, we're not willing to even talk to the other side on an issue that really isn't central to our faith. And I wish it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
you know.
I had another interesting experience a little over a year ago at a very large church in Florida, and they had booked me about a year in advance of the actual event. And a week or so before the talk, the pastor called me up and he said, "So, would you be open to, instead of doing a talk, having me interview you on the stage?" And it was a stroke of genius, because I shared the stage with the pastor of this very large church that already had a relationship with the congregants.
That's,
you know,
great.
And because of that, they were willing to listen to what I had to say. But he, you know, he asked me questions, and it was just like a conversation. And it was just a beautiful thing, because, you know, they were respectful. I had credibility because of the pastor being there. And the Q&A session was just phenomenal. I mean, there were grandparents who were concerned about their kids. And I mean, that is one of the things that, for me, that my heart goes out to these students who are growing up in an environment where they feel like they have to choose either science or faith. And if that's the case, then both sides lose, you know. And I really want to get out there with the message that these kids don't have to choose one or the other.
That's awesome. So, Ron, do you have any more questions for us?
Well, just I want to make this comment. The church doesn't have an issue with science and faith being at odds with each other.
Sure.
You know, at least they recognize that science is valid. It's just that they have that one perspective about it being very recent as opposed to having, you know, any length of time to its existence. So, mm-hmm. They would have no issue with the fact that, you know, science is, you know, is compatible with Scripture, mm-hmm. insofar as it's, you know, a Scripture, of course, is what we look at, but it's, you know, it's just that they kind of are in that narrow interpretation as to what the word yom means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tried to say something about it, and it didn't go over too well. You know, because I'm not trying to challenge or bring up a controversy, but I just wanted to kind of, you know, say there are other ways of looking at it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the only resistance you get sometimes, is people are just not willing to at least hear other perspectives, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, you just keep on fighting that fight, man. You're doing a good job. And I really appreciate you calling, Ron.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Okay. Bye.
And I think Ron brings up he kind of highlighted something, and that's kind of more of like the need yeah. for something like the ASA.
Yeah, you know, and that perspective is more common than we think. I think the more people I talk to, the more that tell me that, you know, they have a heart for a certain community or church or whatever. In fact, one of the students that was at our annual meeting, I was just really touched. He was a Stanford student, you know, and it was exciting because he was actually part of our startup chapter in the Silicon Valley
awesome.
Yeah, and, he contacted me after the meeting was over, and he said, you know, I just have a real heart for my hometown of Detroit. He's like, you know, people need to understand that, you know, science and faith are not at odds with each other. And, you know, is there something that we can do? Can we reach out to that area? And I was just so moved by it. And we get people doing this sort of thing, you know, from across the country, you know, saying, hey, can you come and talk to some people? And it's just really exciting to see the interest and the hunger, really.
Yeah. I mean, the ASA, I'm looking at a map right here in one of your publications here, and it shows all the different chapters that you guys have. And gosh, yeah. We're talking Arizona State University, Baylor.
Oh, yeah.
We've got one in Boston, Gordon College, Grand Canyon University, Houston, Nashville, New Mexico, Oral Roberts University, Rocky Mountain, Southern California, Washington D.C., Wheaton.
Yeah.
And these are local chapters. Let me ask some questions about this. These are the local chapters of the ASA.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them on college campuses, some of them not.
Right.
So student run organizations on a college campus. So if you're listening right now, guys, you're listening to apologetics.com radio on KKLA, and you want to start something at your school. I don't know if you go to Azusa Pacific or if you're going to Biola, there's no reason why one of these chapters can't start
exactly
on a college campus, and you guys will help them kick
absolutely,
it off.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. Just get in touch with me, Leslie@asa3.org, and we'd be happy to come visit and, you know, get something started. I mean, it's a great place to have these dialogues about science and faith, and there's tons of resources, again, at the ASA website, asa3.org. Yeah.
Or even like a UCLA or a USC,
yeah,
a secular university,
exactly.
Even better.
Yeah.
And then that'd be awesome to see you on those campuses speaking.
Yeah. I mean, we just started a chapter at Arizona State, the largest campus in the U.S. I think it's something like 80,000 students or something.
It's a city.
Yeah. And, you know, we met with the guy that's in charge of campus ministries. He had like 20 or more people heading the various ministries in the room together. And so what they're doing there is identifying Christian faculty members to talk to these students in the chapter. And it's just such a beautiful thing because the students are able to find somebody that's one of their faculty members that they can relate to, who's a Christian, a role model, a person that they can go to and ask their questions and whatnot in a secular environment. It's really exciting.
That is exciting. And it kind of relates back to what you were saying before, that a strong majority of scientists believe in God,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and so that means on these college campuses, sometimes we think we get sucked into the myth that most scientists aren't theists, and it's just not true,
right.
Because we conflate, you know, biology and the social sciences with all of science,
yeah,
and so we start, especially you talked earlier, I mean, when you're talking physics.
Yeah.
Unbelievable things.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, unbelievable things.
Yeah.
And this is the need for the ASA. I keep going AHA and I don't know why. The ASA. Mm-hmm. And if you guys have any questions for Dr. Leslie Wickman, make sure you call us right now. We've got, I don't know, a couple more minutes left at 888-995-5552. One of the things that I always question when I'm talking to somebody of your like stature, I mean, you've been around the block. I mean, you've done a lot in your life, both adventure, sports, and ministry-wise, as well as educationally and career-wise. You've kind of done, you have a full orbed life going on. And one of the questions I have, are there any areas that you really wrestle with in science and Christianity? Kind of, there's almost not a conflict necessarily, but They don't seem to mesh with you right now or in the past. And how do you reconcile those?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been at this long enough now that, well, I started going over kind of the different hurdles that people have. So the first one is
time.
Yeah. And
which we sufficiently covered.
Right. Right. And yeah, it's such a simple topic, right? and then the next one really is, origin of the universe itself, the physical universe. And the next one then is the origin of life and the development of life. And so I think those are kind of the three main hurdles that people have to deal with at one point or another in this kind of science and faith journey. And I've been at this long enough that every time that I've investigated one of those or another even hurdle, I've seen how there's compatibility between science and faith. It's just, again, you know, come back to the two books analogy, where you've got God revealing himself through the book of Scripture as well as the book of his creation.
Yeah.
And both of those books are reliable sources of revelation, and we see how they inform each other. And so we are able to better interpret each of those books by looking at it through the lens of the other.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we look at it that way, to get kind of a full orb picture of what God has done. Mm-hmm. And the main thing I take away from this kind of conversation is number one, Christian, you do not need to run away from these issues.
Right, exactly.
And just because, like, I was just up at Hume Lake teaching mm-hmm. high school students, and I'm not a scientist by any means. I'm more of a philosophy guy. But I got to teach on intelligent design, and my main point that I brought to the students was, guys, I've got a half hour to try to teach you some stuff. I'm going to give you awesome facts that are going to blow your minds. Mm-hmm. They are. Mm-hmm. But the main point to take away is that we as Christians have reasons to believe what we believe. It's not a blind mm-hmm. faith, like
exactly.
some people want to tell you. And the world around us can confirm our faith. In fact, our worldview better explains reality,
yes.
and that includes God's creation, yeah. all of reality.
Yeah, exactly.
It screams his glory.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just, you know, one thing after another that you discover when you're investigating both of these books, that you're just like, oh my gosh, there's another piece of evidence that these go together. And I mean, just for example, and I think this is one that has resonated with you as well, is what's variously been called the fine-tuning argument or the anthropic principle or the teleological argument or the Goldilocks principle. They're all basically pointing to the same thing, that there's this very long and even growing list of universal parameters that have to be finely tuned within a super narrow range of values to get life anywhere in the universe. And that the odds are so remote of those numbers just lining up by random chance that it takes a lot more faith to think it happened by random chance and that we just got lucky than it does to believe in a creative intelligence behind it all.
That's absolutely true. And that highlights the need for four groups like the ASA, American Scientific Affiliation. And guys, if you have any questions with science having to do in that realm, you need to go to www.asa3.org, and you can get all your resources there. If you want somebody to inform your church, Dr. Leslie Wickman would love to come share her story and show you that faith and science are totally compatible. They do not contradict each other. You can get in touch with her through her website, LeslieWickman.com, or her email, which is
Leslie@ASA3.org.
Awesome, guys. Make sure you visit those sites and email Dr. Wickman with any more questions or get her to your church. This is apologetics.com, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. And you guys are amazing. Thanks for staying up for us. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good night.